Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Welcome to Infinite Cast Part 2, Inherent Cast Part 17.
Sure.
Yes.
Why not?
We are here with you. It's Friday night.
Friday night, happy hour.
And we're ready to pod.
Yes.
Where were we in this book?
Such a good question. We're in the shit is where we are. We're in the weeds. It's never gotten more confusing. We just left Doc crying about, he had a dream about like his mom and like dying, like the concept of dying.
Oh yeah.
Flatnoid has perpetrated his last root canal. He went and checked in on the like kind of suburban California police militia, like civilian militia.
Yes.
Dinas got knocked over for all of his frozen Chinese food.
Yes.
We're starting to get freaky.
All right.
And now it's at this point, I think I can preface this whole thing by being like, I'm starting to forget who knows that they know that we know, you know?
Yes.
You know?
Exactly.
It's like that classic episode of the TV show Friends.
Where somebody knows that they know that we know?
They don't know that we know that they know.
Ah, yes. A classic situation.
A classic comedic situation.
Yes.
With knowledge. Knowledges.
Knowledges. Yeah. So many knowledges.
I'm a little sick today, yeah. I apologize.
This is Molly's flu game.
What's flu game?
There's a legendary...
Oh, the Michael Jordan?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Sorry, I was thinking like Molly's game, like the Sorkin movie, that was like flu game, fly game. Okay, yeah.
Yes.
It's not going to be a Jordan's flu game. I don't think I'm going to turn out an incredible performance.
Okay,
but.
Great. Well, let's just get through it.
Okay, yes. The Mucinex monster is coming to get me. gone off that Mucinex. All right, let's do it. Chapter 13. Time was when Doc used to actually worry about turning into Bigfoot Bjornsson, ending up just one more diligent cop, going only where the leads pointed him, opaque to the light which seemed to be finding everybody else walking around in this regional dream of enlightenment, denied the widescreen revelations Bigfoot called hippie... Hippiphanies, a feminine phenomenon.
It's a hippiphany.
Doomed instead to be accosted by freak after freak, drawing, "Let me tell you about my trip, man," never to be up early enough for what might one day turn out to be a false dawn, which might have accounted for why, up until last night, he'd always been willing to cut Bigfoot a certain amount of slack. Not that he would necessarily want that to get around, but now, according to Art Tweedle, there was Bigfoot's probable connection to the LAPD's private army of vigilantes, maybe even, Doc couldn't help but wondering, to the raid at Channelview Estates. By the time he got to Parker Center, he was feeling like some allegorical statue in the park labeled community disapproval. "Hi, Bigfoot. Been out smoking any N-words lately?" That's not what they say. No. He was pretty sure what he said out loud was, "Anything new on that Bel Air case?" Which I think that's Flatnoid getting popped on the trampoline. "Don't ask. Well, actually do ask. Maybe I need to vent." The vibes around robbery homicide division this morning were as cordial as they ever got, which was hardly at all. Maybe it was Doc. Maybe the nature of the work here, but he could have sworn that today Bigfoot's colleagues were going out of their way to avoid them both. "Hope you don't mind if we go take a Code 7 someplace?" Bigfoot reaching under the table and dragging out a Ralph's shopping bag with what looked like several kilos of paperwork in it, getting up and heading out the door, motioning Doc to follow. They went downstairs and out to a Japanese greasy spoon around the corner where the Swedish pancakes with lingonberries couldn't be beat, and which arrived, in fact, no more than a minute and a half after Bigfoot had put his head in the door. "Ethnic as always, Bigfoot. I'd share these with you, but then you'd be addicted and it would be something else on my conscience," Bigfoot started in scarfing. Those pancakes sure look good. Maybe Doc could spoil Bigfoot's appetite or something. He found himself purring maliciously. "Aren't you ever bitter that you missed being up there on Cielo Drive, stomping around that famous crime scene with the rest of the high-living heat, wiping out them fingerprints, leaving your own, so forth?" Having grabbed a second fork from Doc's setup and eating now with both hands. "Minor concern, Sportello. That's only ego and regret. Everybody's got that. Well, everybody who works for a living. But do you want to know the truth?" No. Here it is anyway. The truth is, right now, everybody's really fucking scared. Who? You people? All them burrito hounds up in Homicide? Scared of what? Charlie Manson? Odd yes, here in the capital of eternal youth, endless summer and all, that fear should be running the town again as in days of old. Like the Hollywood blacklist you don't remember, and the Watts rioting you do. It spreads like blood in a swimming pool till it occupies all the volume of the day. And then maybe some playful soul shows up with a bucket full of piranhas, dumps them in the pool, and right away they can taste the blood. They swim around looking for what's bleeding, but they don't find anything. All of them getting more and more crazy till the craziness reaches a point, which is when they begin to feed on each other. Doc, consider this for a bit. What's in them lingonberries, Bigfoot? It's like, Bigfoot had continued, there's this evil sub-god who rules over Southern California, who off and on will wake from his slumber and allow the dark forces that are always lying there just out of the sunlight to come forth. Wow. And you've seen him? This evil sub-god, maybe he talks to you? Yes, and he looks just like a hippie pothead freak. Something, huh? Wondering what this was about, Doc, trying to be helpful, said, well, what I've been noticing since Charlie Manson got popped is a lot less eye contact from the street world. You folks all used to be like a crowd at the zoo. Oh, look, the male one is carrying the baby and the female one is paying for the groceries sort of thing. But now it's like, pretend they're not even there because maybe they'll mass murder our ass. It's all turned to sick fascination, opined Bigfoot. And meantime, the whole field of homicides being stood on its ear. Bye-bye, Black Dahlia. Rest in peace, Tom Ince? I-N-C-E? Ink? I don't know.
I don't know that one. Tom, me neither. Tom Ince?
Tom Ince? Inche? Yes, we've seen the last of those good old-time L.A. murder mysteries, I'm afraid. We found the gateway to hell, and it's asking far too much of your L.A. civilian not to want to go crowding on through it, horny and giggling as always, looking for that latest thrill. Lots of overtime for me and the boys, I guess, but it brings us all that much closer to the end of the world. Bigfoot ran a deep scan of the place from the toilets and back out to the desert light of the street and lifted the Ralph's bag on the table. This Coy Harlingen matter... I didn't want to discuss it up in the office. He began to bring out ungainly wads of papers of different sizes, colors, and states of deterioration. I pulled the tub on this, expecting what we technically call zip shit. Imagine my surprise at finding how many of my colleagues, at how many far-flung outposts of law enforcement, not to mention levels of power, have had their lunch hooks all over it. Coy Harlingen's not only used multiple AKAs, he also had a number of offices running him, typically at the same time, among which, I hope I don't shock or offend, have been unavoidably those elements who wouldn't mind if Coy really did end up under a granite slab with his final alias carved thereon. Coy's overdose, or whatever it was, there must be a lot of monthly IPRs on that by now. Any chance of having a look? Except that Brother Noguchi's shop could never quite bring themselves to call it a homicide. Do you know that reference?
Brother
Noguchi?
No.
Noguchi. And, so nobody was ever required to file any progress reports, intra, extra, non, whatever. On the face of it, just one more OD, one less junkie, case cleared. One stock would have said, well, that's that. Can I go now? But with this new fascist model, Bigfoot, the one he'd recently found out maybe he couldn't trust after all, the old style of needling somehow wasn't as much fun anymore. You mean it would be a routine case except for all this paperwork, is what he said carefully, which, even just eyeballing it, it does seem a little out of proportion. Like the one pink little DOA slip would have been enough. Ah, you noticed. It's certainly the kind of documentary attention dead folks don't see too much of. You would almost think Coy Harlingen was really alive someplace and kicking, wouldn't you? Resurrected. So what have you found out? Technically, Sportello, I am not even aware this case exists. Cool with you? Groovy? Why do you think we're down here and not upstairs? Some internal affairs soap opera, I figure, which you're desperate to keep me away from. Now, what could that be? Fair enough. What I want to keep you away from is vast, Sportello, vast. On the other hand, if there is something trivial I can let you in on from time to time, why get too paranoid about it? He rooted around in the Ralph's bag and found a long, speckled box nearly full of 3x5 index cards. Why, what have we here? Oh, but you know what these are. field interrogation reports, souvenirs of everybody you guys ever stopped and hassled. And this sure looks like a lot of them for one junkie saxophone player. Why don't you just flip through these quickly, see if there's anything that looks familiar? Evelyn Wood, don't fail me now. Doc began to run through the cards, trying to keep alert for one of Bigfoot's rude surprises. He had met a few close-up magicians and knew about the practice of forcing a card on a spectator. He saw no reason for Bigfoot to be above this kind of trickery. And what do you know? What was this? Doc had nearly half a second to decide if the card he'd caught sight of was worth keeping from Bigfoot, and then he remembered that Bigfoot already knew which one it was. Here, he said, pointing. I know I've seen that name someplace. Puck Beaverton. Does that sound familiar to you? Puck Beaverton?
No, is that somebody
I feel like
met
they
before?
Mentioned it in this book? Maybe we'll find out. Bigfoot nodded, taking it out of the box. Excellent choice. One of Mickey Wolfman's jailbird praetorians. Let's see now. He pretended to read off the
card.
Was
Puck Beaverton involved with the deceased Wolfman guard's wife?
That's Sloane's wife's boy, the Zomes guy, right?
Yes.
Was that Puck Beaverton?
Maybe.
Or the Riggs. One with the, that's Riggs.
With the motorcycle chick.
Clancy Sherlock?
Maybe.
Puck Beaverton? Will you? Here.
Well, I'll look up Puck Beaverton while you continue, but I will also say that Thomas Insa was an early, like, silent era producer who died mysteriously on William Randolph Hearst's yacht.
Oh, classic.
Classic.
They never knew who did it.
It remained an unsolved case, though. Officially, the cause of death is, that's a crazy thing.
We've got the surf videos on, and there's some kind of insane, like, mono windsurfer.
Yes. Puck Beaverton.
All right. He pretended to read off the card. Yes.
I believe Puck Beaverton is introduced in chapter 13, which is where we are.
Got it. Just the name sounded familiar, but yes. I assume that's from reading this book or watching the movie. Sheriff's people happened to run into him at the Venice home of the very dealer who sold Coy Harlingen the smack that killed him, or didn't kill him, as the case may be. He pushed the FIR card across the formica, and Doc scanned it doubtfully. Subject, unemployed. Claims to be a friend of Leonard Germain Loose Meat, a.k.a. El Drano. I just came over to play a couple games of pool. Subject seemed unusually nervous in Beaverton's company. Oh, wait, I'm reading in. Sorry, I should be reading in whatchamacallit's voice.
Bigfoot?
No, the other guy. Subject seemed unusually nervous in Beaverton's company. That's it? What was Puck doing at Coy's dealer's place, do you think? Bigfoot shrugged. Maybe there to buy? Any record of him using? Somebody'd have to look. Which must have sounded jive-ass even to Bigfoot, because he added, Puck's file could be in storage by now. Far, far away. Someplace like Fontana or beyond. Unless, a hustler's pause as if a thought had just struck him. Let's hear it, Bigfoot. I seem to recall that some years ago, just before he went into Folsom, this Beaverton used to work for a loan shark downtown named Adrian Prussia. And this dealer, El Drano, also happened to be one of Prussia's steady customers. Maybe Puck was there on his former employer's behalf. Doc felt uneasy. His nose was beginning to run. I remember Adrian Prussia from back when I had that skip tracing job. Fucking snake, man. Bigfoot signaled the counterman. Choto Kenichiro Dozo Moto Panukeku. Panukeku.
Moto Panukeku.
Moto Panukeku. I feel like we just watched something that the like Japaneseification of English was really funny. I'm not going to be able to remember. You got it, Lieutenant. Not quite like my mother's, but still a real trip, Bigfoot confided. Though what I really go for here is the respect. Didn't get much of that from your mom, huh? Had Doc really said that or only thought it? He waited for Bigfoot to take offense, but the detective only went on. You probably imagine I have a lot of status up in robbery homicide. Who could blame you for thinking? Man goes around like Prince Charles, like they're going to crown him chief any day. The reality, however... He was shaking his head slowly, looking at Doc in this oddly beseeching way. God help us all. Dentists on trampolines. But no, that wasn't it. Not exactly. Okay, Bigfoot, aware of another con job in progress, I can tell you this. The other night, when we dropped Rudy Blatnoid off in Bel Air, it was dark, he was giving all these directions, whole lot of turns. I don't think I could find the way back there even in daylight or know how this connects to wherever you guys found the body, but it was about 11 p.m., scribbling on a napkin, and here's the address. Bigfoot nodded. That's just where we found the body. He was staying there as a house guest, and this helps a little with the chronology. Thank you, Doc. Hair and drug use issues notwithstanding, I've never thought of you as anything less than professional. Don't get sentimental on me, man. It fucks up your edge. I can be even more emotionally irresponsible than that, replied Bigfoot. Listen, there are certain polygraph keys on this case that if I told you what they were, then the only ones who'd know would be Homicide, the killer, and you. Good thing you're not telling me then. Suppose I tell you anyway. Why should you? Just so we know where we're at, as you people say. You mean just so you'll have another reason to run me in. Thanks, Bigfoot. How about if I put my fingers in my ears and scream if you try to tell me? You won't do that. Really? Doc, genuinely curious. Why won't I? Because you're one of the few hippie potheads in this town who appreciate the distinction between childlike and childish. Besides, this is right up your alley. Listen, we're officially calling it a fatal neck injury. Don't do that. But more specifically, Dr. Blatnoid had puncture wounds on his throat consistent with bites from the canines of a mid-sized wild animal. That's what the coroner found. Keep it under your hat. Well, now that's mighty weird, Bigfoot, Doc said slowly, because Rudy Blatnoid was one of the partners in a tax dodge that calls itself, get this, Golden Fang Enterprises. Huh? I don't suppose you had the SID test out on those neck punctures for gold or nothing like that. I shouldn't think there'd be much trace. Gold is all but chemically inactive, as you might have learned in chemistry class if you hadn't been ditching it all the time to score dope. Wait, what happened to Locard's exchange principle? Every contact leaves traces? It sure would be ironic, man, is all I'm saying, if it turned out Blatnoid was bit to death by a golden fang. Or even better, like, two golden fangs. I don't, Bigfoot tilting his head and hitting it like a swimmer trying to clear water from his ear, see why anything like that would be especially material? He's like tweaking. You mean why would the fangs have to be gold instead of just like some everyday werewolf fangs? Well, okay. Because it's the golden fang, man. Yes, yes, the decedent's tax shelter or whatever. So what? No, not just a tax shelter, Bigfoot. Much, much more what you would call vast. Oh, and this wouldn't, patiently enough, just be some more of your paranoid hippie bullshit, would it? Because frankly, neither the department nor, more importantly, I have the time to waste on these pothead fantasy leads. Then you don't mind if I just keep looking into it myself? I mean, there's no IA issues here, I hope. No deliberate LAPD obstruction, nothing like that. Everybody's time is precious, philosophized Bigfoot, reaching for his wallet, in its own way. Doc was parked down in Little Tokyo, so he walked Bigfoot to the corner of 3rd and San Pedro and peeled off there, flashing a peace sign. Oh, and Bigfoot. Uh-huh. Have the lab look for traces of copper. What? Not the kind that goes stumbling all over the crime scene, contaminating evidence. More like copper, the metal. See, gold teeth are never pure gold. So dentists like to alloy it with copper. If you hadn't ditched forensics class to go steal hubcaps to plant on some innocent hippie, you might have known that. All right, that's the end of that section. How are we doing on time?
19 minutes. Do you want to
go a little
more?
Yeah. Doc called Clancy Sherlock, where she tended bar over in Inglewood. Hi, how'd it work out with those two bikers the other night?
They did a lot of reds and fell asleep, thanks. Listen, have you seen Boris Spivey lately?
There was a skip, not quite a tremor in her voice. It could have been from smoking.
That's just what I was going to ask you. ESP, man. Because it turns out Boris has disappeared. His place is empty. All his stuff is gone. Nobody at Knucklehead Jack's has seen him.
Doc located a cool, went to light it, then just sat staring at it instead. Could Bigfoot be right? Was Doc the kiss of death, laying bad karma on everybody he touched? Did you scare him or something? Now she sounded pissed off. How would I do that when I can't even reach higher than his knee? Maybe he owes money. Maybe it's old lady problems. Do you know her, by the way? Donette from Pico Rivera? Actually, I tried to call her, but she seems to be missing too. Think they're together? You have me confused with Ann Landers. What did you want with Boris? The guy I'm really looking for is Puck Beaverton, and I thought Boris might have had some line on his whereabouts. That asshole. Almost sounds like you've dated old Puck. Both him and his roommate, Einar. Don't ask me to go into details. The boys have a slightly different idea about what a three-way is. I ended up feeling, let's say, underused and made the mistake of telling them so. Puck and Einar just murmured together for a while, and then they kicked me out. 4 a.m. in West Hollywood. I didn't mean to reawaken painful memories. Course not. It's okay. Just that there's being handled and being handled. And this wasn't even fun. Boris mentioned that Puck might have been headed for Vegas, and I was just trying to narrow that down a little. If Einar's with him, they'll be looking for girls to treat like shit, preferably ones who don't mind too much. Happy hunting. Maybe some tropical evening we could play canasta. Sure, bring a friend. Waiting at the office when Doc got back from lunch at Wavo's was a disheveled girl in a tiny skirt whose eyes, after the style of the times, were hugely made up, not only with mascara, but also with liquid liner and shadow almost the color of the smoke from a faulty head gasket, suggesting to Doc, as always, a deep, unreachable innocence, all of which sent the throbbing idol of his lecherousness into overdrive. Trillium Fortnite, she introduced herself. Now there's a Sprite Pepsi for the ages.
Yes.
They said you could help me. They did, eh? Suavely waving half a pack of cools at her, which she declined. And how many of them were there? Oh, I'm sorry. Donette and Boris. They said, whoa, Donette and Boris. How long ago was this? About a week. You wouldn't know where they are now? She shook her head, it seemed to Doc, sadly. Nobody does. But you talked to them. On the phone, they thought somebody was listening in, so they didn't stay on long. Did it sound like a local call? You know, like sometimes. It sounded like they were out on the road, a payphone on a frontage road off some interstate. You could hear that? She shrugged. It was the way the voices combined. Doc must have been giving her a peculiar look. Not voices, like parts in a musical piece. Serenade for Peterbilt rig and VW bus, Doc guessed. Actually, Kenworth and Econoline van, plus a street Hemi, a Harley, and some miscellaneous clunkers. This sensitivity of ear, she went on to explain, had proved useful both in her day job teaching music theory at UCLA and also for moonlighting as a woodwind specialist in early music ensemble gigs. Anything from a double quint Palmer down to a Sopranino Sham, I'm your person. Doc had a hard-on and his nose was running. That old cootie food had found him again. Trillium, on the other hand, had dropped into a peculiar silence, which, if he'd been in his right mind, he would have recognized as the Some Other Guy blues. He found a piece of paper from a yellow legal pad with a long shopping list of junk food items on it in pencil and rolled it into the typewriter just to keep busy. So, how did Boris and Donette think I could help you? Someone I know has disappeared, and I'd like to find out what happened to him. Doc typed, lucky fellow. We could start with name and last known address. His name is Puck. Puck. Uh-huh. Puck Beaverton. Last address was in West Hollywood, but I'm not sure of the street. Now two or three angles were occurring to Doc at the same time, displaying themselves in a sort of hyperdimensional pattern across the piece of blank office wall he often used for these exercises. Trillium here might turn out to be some kind of hired heat herself, chasing down Puck on behalf of whoever'd made him afraid enough to split town. Of course, Puck could also be an ancient music lover and running some kind of illicit market in hot Sopranino charms. Or much more annoyingly, Trillium might have been deep into some number with Puck and unable to let it go. Doc had learned by now not to second-guess anybody's choice of romantic object, but who the hell was supposed to be looking out for this kid? How much did she know about her dream boy's job history, about Einar, Or had she actually, this smoggy-eyed innocent, found the Puck and Einar experience trippy in a way Clancy hadn't? And was there any choice for the moment but to dummy up about all of this? It would have almost been more comforting to think of her as a contract killer. Boris gave me an address in Las Vegas, Trillium said. You want me to what? Check it out? I want you to come along with me to Vegas and help me find him. Sucker, sap, and other old movie terms that were sure to occur to Doc in a minute. He saw the hustle in progress, but as usual, was thinking with his dick. Not to mention more sentimentally, whatever the difference was. Sure thing, he said. Do you happen to have a picture of this gent? Did she? Out of her shoulder bag, she fished one of those plastic accordion things with room for, he lost count, maybe 100 snapshots of Puck and Trillium, walking on the beach in the sunset, dancing at different mass outdoor gatherings, playing volleyball, running in and out of the surf. It looked like a personals ad in the LA Free Press, only longer and with pictures. Doc noticed that Puck had his head shaved and tattooed with a swastika, which might help with IDing him if and when. Also, in at least half the snapshots was a third presence. Eyes set close together, one side of his upper lifted in discontent, managing usually to squeeze in between Trillium and Puck. And this would be Einar, an associate of Puck's. They met at in the penitentiary. All right if I take a couple of these just to show around? Not at all. When can we leave? Anytime. There's a shuttle flight out of West Imperial, if that's cool. Beyond cool, she said. Driving freaks me out. Shall we stop?
Yes. I think that's a good place.
Oh, boy.
What?
I don't remember Trillium as part of the movie at all.
Trillium?
This lady.
No, but as long as we're speaking of the movie, the pancake scene is one of the best scenes in the movie.
I don't remember that too well, honestly.
Moto panakeku! Just Brolin hollering at the chef.
We drove by Little Tokyo on our way back from Korean barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
Frick. It was something good. It was anyway, we don't have to spend too long on it.
All right, so what's going on?
Such a good question. I mean, I don't know. Things have gone off the rails. He's trying to figure out what Bigfoot knows, why Bigfoot is dangling Puck Beaverton at him. I can't make heads or tails of it.
We'll just let him wash over us.
My nose is running, but I don't have a boner.
It seems like things are colliding, but I'm in ways that I'm not quite sure.
Yes. Yeah, I don't think Shasta got mentioned at all this section. The Coy Harlingen thing is like,
maybe there's a connection between Rudy Blatnoid's death and Golden Fang, but we're not sure.
Yeah.
The major thing of this is that Coy Harlingen is, we have now seen almost certainly an asset being run from multiple agencies.
A spook, right? A classical spook?
I think a spook. Now, spook, I always think of as an agent of one of the agencies.
Yes.
Could be any number of willing to hapless individuals who are, recruited to do various things, up to and including stuff like, streaking in the convention as Coy did.
Yeah. There's something about him.
Yes.
I feel like the main thing we know about him is that despite, him saying that he wanted Doc to check in on his Hope.
Yes.
He's not, that part of his life is over. He's never going back to
Not.
His wife and, or baby
he
mama.
He seems in pretty deep.
In deep. Yes.
Yes.
It's funny the bit where Bigfoot's kind of teasing Doc by being like, there's this guy who's always coming around and giving bad vibes and, saying that it's all this connected evil, underworld type shit. It's you.
Yes.
You, why are you causing problems for me? And I'm sure Doc is also like, why are you causing problems for me?
Yes. Well, it's always the most terrifying possibility is it's all really not connected.
Of course.
And that nothing really matters. And ooh, anything that you see with that appears to be a connection or a conspiracy is just multiple stupid things operating next to each other.
Stupid coincidences.
Maybe it is all a coincidence, and then what does that mean? It means nothing. It's meaningless.
You want to hear a stupid coincidence?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's But then I'm like, coincidence or no? So we recently had someone like hit our car in a parking lot and like dinged it a little bit, and it's a lease, so we need to like keep it, you know, tip top. So I took it into the car shop to get fixed. And there was, you know, a page on the zillions of papers that I signed and initialed when I was dropping it off that said, I certify that I've taken my belongings out of the car, and like anything else that happens to them is no longer has anything to do with me. And I was like, oh yeah, sure. Thinking we went to Coachella and I completely mangled a sleeping bag, a cheap sleeping bag from the internet. Like the zipper got really fucked up and it was like going to be unsalvageable. There's something about why is it zippers that are like our,
there's got
to be a better way. Can someone invent something different?
Somebody come up with zipper two.
Zipper 2.0, the better zipper, zippier zipper. Anyway, so that was in there, and then I totally forgot that this other bag, a Weekender bag that I had also snaggled the zipper after like 15 years of ownership, and I had to just put it in the fucking front seat. I was like, someday I will take it to a tailor to replace the zipper.
Yes.
And then I retrieved the car, and they had taken everything out of the...
Did you ask about the stuff at all?
No, because I signed it away. I was on paper as saying it didn't matter to me. They were serious. So they took everything out, including like the phone charger that connects, you know, the phone to the car for navigation. And I realized how funny it was that there's two separate things that both had stuck zippers that got taken out of the thing at the same time.
Well, I think
taken from my control, taken out of my responsibility. I don't have to worry about them. They're in the garbage.
Yes. One second.
Yeah. And I'll monologue while you deal with this. Yeah. No, I don't. I what does it all mean? Is it a coincidence or is it just me being really bad at getting rid of things? I don't know. My first impulse was to take a Doc Sportello type look at the universe and being like, wow, this thing that also was kind of annoying, getting hit your car hit, also removed me, literally unzipped me.
Yes.
Unstuck. My zipper got unstuck.
Yes. I think that is the main takeaway is that you have been released from the burden of having to think or care about these broken zippers.
Yeah. Does anyone know how to fix a zipper? Please sound off in the comments if you do. I've literally never, it's like the one thing.
Yes.
You know what, you know, once the zipper gets off disaligned,
yeah,
it's like impossible.
Well, you got to jiggle it.
But then sometimes you jiggle too much and then it like gets totally seized.
Yes.
Well, regardless, you found me as an unstuck woman. Thanks to the random accident of a car.
I've been thinking about the you know, comically fascist cops in the sections of Inherent Vice.
Yeah.
Has had me thinking about the really terrible vibes of this week in news things of seeing, you know, the National Guard redeployed to college campuses and cop snipers on the roof of college buildings, overlooking things, overlooking student protests and stuff like that, which genuinely does seem like something that we like excised from. Like, obviously the cops are still very bad, but just the optics of National Guard on college campuses, you would think that someone somewhere in the chain of command would be like, hey, that's like kind of the one thing, one of the handful of cop related optics things we shouldn't do.
Right. I mean, I would say it takes it back to the zipper. We can't figure out a better way to not do that. You fucking idiots haven't figured out a better way to infiltrate and destroy protest movements. You just have to send a bunch of goons with helmets on and guns.
Yes.
Idiots. Dumbasses. No wonder you're in this job.
I know.
No imagination.
No.
Get a little. They had more imagination in the fucking late 60s.
Yes.
You should be ashamed of yourself. You should be embarrassed. I'd be embarrassed.
Anyway, it seems like a real nothing good will come of this.
I'm very nervous for these people.
Yes, but the college kids are very brave.
Yeah, they're braver than I was. I don't think I would have done that.
No,
honestly.
Well, I mean, the era that we went to college was a particularly...
complacent.
I mean, I'm trying to... I know it's not fair to make time-based excuses, but my particular years in college, 2005 to 2009, was really like the one big political thing was the election of Barack Obama, which just kind of happened.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And everybody was so dissatisfied with like Bush had already gotten reelected, so there wasn't much to do there other than just endure the second term. Because the big action for protesting the Iraq war was what? Getting behind John Kerry?
Yeah, what an exciting candidate.
And then like that already happened. So then you just endure term two. And then suddenly, you know, this savior appears who has, who, you know, kind of just, that election was contested, but it never really seemed like there was any real need to fight that hard because Bush was so unpopular. It just seemed like it was going to happen.
Yeah. I think everyone was like nervous in the sense that he was black and it was like, are we really going to do this? Yes. Like we're talking a big game. Like, are we really going to go through with it? You've seen our whole thing.
Yes.
That's not really what we're all about. It definitely felt like, you know, game over, problem solved. And then, of course, when like things started, I was in college from 2008 to 2012. So I was literally, Obama was elected 2 months after I went to college. Then, you know, the wrongs that started happening, like, were people going to hit the streets and protest like the abuse of the NSA?
Yeah.
It wasn't that it didn't have the like structure that we needed. And Occupy did happen at this time. But I definitely remember looking at that and being like, I see what they're doing. I just don't really see what's going to happen.
Yes.
Now I think it was great.
Well, it certainly seems like the kids these days came up in a context where they have much better infrastructure for this, like the coordination of messaging.
Social media and digital communications.
You know, just like basic strategies of protesting and organizing and horizontal organizing of a effective action.
Yeah.
Things that were totally destroyed from, you know, left memory whenever I was trying to do those things.
Yeah.
You know, because all our recent, the most recent thing in my memory were probably like the NAFTA protests in like the late 2000s, which I was still effectively a child for.
Yeah.
And there was no institutional memory by that other than from a few crunchy old timers that you had no interaction with.
Yeah. And of course I did like pretty hippy dippy, you know, Iraq war protesting in Vermont, where I don't think anyone was worried about the National Guard coming taking us down. It's definitely a different, it's a different world.
Yeah, well, the 68 vibes are strong this week.
Yeah, well, we'll have to support in any way we can.
Yeah, support and uplift.
Support and uplift. It's even happening in L.A. I think there's some gnarly stuff going on at, like, UCLA, for example.
Yeah.
It's bad.
It's bad. Well it's good.
I mean,
but it's good they're doing it, but it's bad why they have to do it.
I mean, listen, I don't want to be all accelerationist about it, but it would be funny if the like, you know, chain of events is like students mass protest universities for supporting, you know, these genocidal things, mass dropouts and lack of enrollment, colleges completely fall apart financially, bursting of the higher education bubble.
Yes.
Ding, ding, ding. Let's go.
Yeah, that would be funny.
Let's go back to community college.
Yes.
It's the best.
Regional education centers.
Regional education, technical education. Come on.
Yeah.
Did I need a bachelor's degree for the first job that I did out of college? I'm going to go ahead and say no.
No.
It was mostly sending emails.
The best thing I learned, or the most useful thing I learned in college, is how to wind cords.
I thought you were going to say how to whine.
No.
I learned to whine in college.
You know, like an XLR cord.
Yes. That's the most useful thing.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, honestly, the thing I probably use most in my personal life.
I think the most practical business things I did, I honed in college, was like sending a professional email and like answering the phone and like talking on the phone, because I worked in a reception.
Oh yeah,
office.
I mean, that's like one of the things that you learn is how to pretend to be a professional until you are. Yes.
Anyway, shout out to all the kids doing the damn thing.
It's you know, forcing yourself into the square.
Forcing yourself into the square.
Yeah.
Becoming the square.
Become the square.
Become the square. Don't be a
square. Yeah.
Don't be a rectangle.
Don't be a rectangle, man.
Yeah. Anyway, anything else?
I don't think so. I'm curious to see where this all goes.
Yeah, we're plowing through it.
Yeah.
Well, slowly but surely.
13?
I was saying offline because I, you know, if you're listening and you've been listening since Infinite Jest, I watched the tennis movie, Challengers, sexy tennis movie. Not even a whiff of Infinite Jest in it. I don't think Guadagnino has read that book.
I don't think that Infinite Jest has a very Italian energy to it.
No, it does not. I don't think there's any Italians even in it. Maybe not even any Italian Americans.
This is the most sexual sport.
A tennis ball.
Oh, when the paddle, it hits the ball. It is the most sexual action.
Yeah, it didn't quite have the spiritual component.
Would you
to
call
tennis.
The tennis playing itself sexy in the movie?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. It was definitely, you know, it was physical. There's some great camera stuff, you know, at one point. Spoiler alert, plug your ears. There was like a ball's eye view, like the, you know, a volley that looked all crazy. That was fucking sick.
Awesome.
You know, a lot of bodies and spaces.
Sweat.
Calf muscles
tensing.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of sweat.
Sweat bands, white shorts.
Quadriceps.
Tape. Around handles.
Oh yeah, there's a really good spoiler alert. There's like, you know, KT tape. It's like kinesthetics tape, like on a guy's shoulder. That I was like, ooh, nice.
Yes.
Anyway, why did I say it? I watched it? They're talking
tennis,
about tennis
shoes, the squeak of the shoe, the thwack of the racket.
Hearing the squeak. Why did I bring it up? I was talking about the tennis movie. Why was I talking about the tennis movie? Something to do with Infinite Jest. Ah, fuck. It's gone.
You lost it. Sorry, I distracted you by
you
talking about the sensuality of tennis.
It's not my fault. It's yours. Now I'm thinking about knees. Ooh, those knees.
All right.
Sorry.
I'm out of things to say, and our food is here.
Let's eat. Bon appetit.
Bon appetit.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.